Yeah. Oh, Katie Dayon, I'm definitely a geek. Oh, man. All right, I'm going to go with that because I was going to, let me try this again. Yahoo, Katie Dayon, I'm definitely sick. Yeah. Hence why the podcast is coming out like 4 days late. But here I am, and I've got enough strength to maybe get through this. I know I promised last week about that Nintendo cool thing that they did in the 1990s. I really want to do it right, and I want to do it when I'm not sick and I have time to write it. So we're going to push that to next week. But I have had like a bunch of stories written that I really like and I want to get to. I just haven't had the voice to be able to do it. You know, it's bad. By the way, the seasons, whenever the seasons change, I get sick. And so we're in this weird period in Japan right now where it's cold one day and the next day it's warm and then it's cold and then it's warm and then it rains, and it rained like 2 times this week, and then it was bright and sunny, but it was freezing cold, and my body just freaks out. It's just like, I don't know how to handle this. Shut down. My body has effectively kernel panicked, and if you don't know what that means, welcome to the podcast. But anyway, you know it's bad when I consider skipping out on going to see my absolute favorite singing artist in the entire world, Sakamoto Maya. She came to Osaka, and it's been 2 years since she's toured, and yesterday was the first day of her show, and I had a ticket, and I'm like, oh, I don't know, maybe I should, but it was great. I'm glad I went, even though now I'm like, oh, okay, I gotta get through this day, but she did give me a little bit of strength and power. I gotta say, you know, a lot about Japan is knowing how to read the air. At least that's what we call it in Japanese, kuki o yomu, right? It means literally to read the air, to be able to sense what's going on around you and react to it accordingly. And definitely I was experiencing this yesterday because, you know, depending on the kind of show you go to, depending on the performance, the mood may be a little different, but with her fans, unlike some other artists that I go to see, things are very, I don't know how to put it in English, strict, rigid, kichintoshiteru, like it's very like proper, prim and proper maybe is the best way to put it. And there's just certain politeness and courtesy that you have to follow when you're going to see her show. One of which is that you don't get up for bathroom breaks. You really, like, if you have to go to the washroom, you basically have 2 shots at it. There's one point during the show when she'll walk off stage to do a costume change, and the band will keep playing, but that's not your moment to move. Your moment to move is when that song is over. You have about a 15-second window until the band starts up again, and at that point, you get up out of your seat and you make a mad dash for the door. And by the way, in Japan, generally speaking, if you're not sure of what you should be doing, look around, because you'll probably notice people doing something or not doing something, and being able to read that, in other words, read the air and kind of see what's going on, that's how you learn the social cues in Japan for the rules, the unwritten rules, quote unquote. As soon as that song was over, like 10 people shot up out of their chair and made a mad dash for the door. I mean, literally people were running for the door. And so I'm like, okay, because the whole first act, I had, in the first half of the show, I had been like, oh my God, it's like, I'm doing the toire iku dance is what we call it. I gotta go to the washroom dance. And so it's like, okay, I'm loving this. It's a great set list, but you know, I make a mad dash where I know, okay, I've got like maybe 2 minutes. And of course, I'm on the like top floor. It's like a 3-story balcony kind of place for this big concert hall we're in. Washroom is obviously on the floor below me. So I and a bunch of people make a mad dash for the door, and I'm climbing up the stairs, and then I cut myself on the railing. I like tripped, and the staff is looking at me like, what is going on? And so I go and I take care of business, and then I come back up and I go in the door, and I know what to expect. But there's this reaction from the staff of like, they see my face and they're like, oh my God, how do I explain to her what you're supposed to do? And I'm like, I know what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to stand on the wall. This is also courtesy. You stand on the wall and wait until the song is over. Now, at the time, the band was just, you know, playing an instrumental track while she was still changing, but it's politeness, at least here in Japan. So basically, you wait until the song is over, and there were like 6 or 7 people standing along the wall, and I move to the wall, and the guy is looking at me like, oh God, I don't know how to explain to her, and he keeps trying to explain to me, and I'm like, no, I'm like looking at him, I'm like, dude, I know what I'm supposed to do. Stand over on the wall and wait until the song's over. And then once the song is over, everybody moved, and you get back in your seats as quickly as possible, and you have to crouch down as you're going. You know, the idea is not to disturb anyone. That's generally speaking the rule in Japan, is just try not to cause trouble for anyone. And it's a, It's a double-edged sword. But regardless, if you're visiting Japan, if you live here, just keep an eye out for those kinds of things. It can be tricky sometimes, I know, but it's one of the things that keeps Japan moving, I suppose. And by the way, I'll link to a few of my favorite Sakamoto Maya songs. She's got over 200. It's if I could pick just three or four. So I'll just link to some of her stuff. Any of her stuff is great. She does a lot of anime songs. And, you know, frankly, I mean, I like anime, but I'm really more into, you know, music. And I like her as an artist, not necessarily as a voice actress or as an anime singer. I just like her because she's really good. And God, I will eventually do a whole episode on her, perhaps, because I adore her. Anyway, let's get to some news. LINE has launched LINE Pay Invoice Payment, which allows users to pay utilities and other bills using LINE Pay, right from within the LINE app. Some companies even support payment via LINE Points. You can charge your LINE Pay balance via a bank account with the app, or take it to a convenience store to load money with cash. And LINE has actually updated their app recently to add a very quick and easy-to-use button right in the settings area to allow you to charge very quickly. They're really pushing hard on this. Now, after charging your account, a user will simply scan the QR code that's printed on the paper invoice that you receive in the mail to start the process. The initial rollout is going to support Tokyo Electric Company TEPCO with Gifu-based Densan System, as well as SMBC Finance Service and Mitsubishi UFJ Factor Support to roll out over the next 2 months. Now, the way I usually pay my bills is you'll get a slip in the mail, and it'll tell you what you need to do. And unfortunately and fortunately, the standard here tends to be to take it to any of the convenience stores, any major chain, even some of the smaller ones support it. You just take the little piece of paper in, you give it to them, and you pay your bill and you go. Online bill pay, it depends on what is. Sometimes it'll work. I'm able to pay certain parts of my utilities bills online, for example, but the rest, you actually have to physically take the paper in and walk it to the convenience store and hand it to them and pay it in cash. It really just depends on what's going on. Sometimes they can do auto draft support from your bank account or through a credit card or something, but generally speaking, convenience store pay tends to be the standard here. So I think this is great, you know, giving us more options to be able to pay. It might get people to use LINE Pay more and be able to have more convenient ways to pay their bills. And LINE Pay is great because it can act like a credit card. So you're able to charge your LINE Pay with your bank account, have it ready to go, and then you know exactly how much you need to pay. You just pay it right there. And actually, this works with LINE Mobile too. You're able to pay with LINE Pay, and you don't have to have a credit card. So it's great for people who just want to have cash, just want to do a bank account. It's a great way to add many things. Apple Pay support, in fact, if you charge that and then you add it to a Suica card, a mobile Suica card on iOS, you're able to basically have Apple Pay without needing a credit card at all. So I think this is great, and LINE is really pushing hard for mobile payments. And definitely, I think the competition is heating up. And of course, not to be outdone, the three so-called megabanks, that's Mitsubishi Tokyo UFJ, Mitsui Sumitomo Ginko, and Mizuho, have announced plans to collaborate in order to strengthen the standardization of payments via QR code to allow users to make payments via smartphones. Now, it's similar to LINE Pay, but these banks' QR code payment system will allow users to complete their transactions with a registered credit card by scanning their specific QR code, which is found inside of an app on their smartphone, at the register of their store terminal in order to be identified. Actually, LINE Pay does something similar. This is how you use LINE Pay at many stores. You'll pull out your QR code, show it to the cashier, and you scan it. And Family Mart's iOS app actually has a digital T-Point card. Now, the T-Point card is Video Chain Rentals Staya's point card system, and it's also used at Family Mart and other locations. You're able to show that to the cashier, and they can scan it, and you have a digital point card. I used to have to go through T-cards every few months because the magnetic strip on there was really weak, and it would always wear out, and so they'd scan it and scan it and scan it, and then it wouldn't work, and so they have to go and type in the number and everything, and it just took too long. So finally they launched this digital T-point card system last year, and I was able to switch completely to digital, and it's great. What I really wish is we could have Apple Watch support, but I guess that's another story, you know. And I personally still prefer NFC payments. You know, I use Apple Pay a lot, and I really wish you didn't have to fiddle with QR codes, and I wish you didn't have to, you know, fire up the iOS app and get out your T-Point card and scan it to them. It's really kind of messy and slow, and Family Mart's app can be really slow to launch. It can take like 20 to 30 seconds to launch depending on the network conditions. It's downloading a bunch of stuff in the background. So it uses some data, and it also just, it takes a while. It's like, I should just be able to tap it, one button, bam, fire it up, and it's got the QR code. Like, I should be able to add it to Wallet, frankly. I should be able to add it to the Wallet app and then double tap from anywhere to get to my carts, bam and done. And that would also add Apple Watch support, you know? It seems like there are much better ways to do this. Frankly, I wish it would know that you're in a Family Mart and would automatically pull it up on your Apple Watch or your iOS device. It would know, hey, you're in a Family Mart. You're probably going to want your point card. Here it is, you know? I think they do this in other countries at some locations. I feel like Walgreens does this at in places in the U.S. You know, Lawson tried having Apple Watch support, and they actually just recently issued an update and removed it. And I never got it to work, frankly. I was never able to add my Lawson. Lawson has their own point card system, the Ponta. And I was never able to add my Ponta card to the iPhone, let alone to my Apple Watch. It just kept saying it's not registered, and like to call them, and I'd call them, and it was a whole mess. So, you know, honestly though, the one benefit to using QR codes is that much like Rakuten Pay and Docomo's D payment, we talked about that a few months ago, NFC hardware isn't required, which means that having a QR code based system allows any smartphone that has capability to run these apps is supported. So people who have an older phone or a lower cost phone are able to get in on the action too. And, you know, I really think it's great. Things are slowly changing, and frankly, it's good to see cooperation between banks, and it's good to see standardizations in place and competition. And what's nice is that I think, unlike a lot of countries, maybe America, even though there's competition, you'll see places that maybe will have their own proprietary system, or they'll buy into one particular system and they'll push that as their standard, but they'll also support the other standards. So there's lots of Velika based payment systems, and there's lots of things that are supported on Apple Pay. One of which that isn't, unfortunately, is Eddy. Now, Eddy has been around for years, and it's electronic money. And the local supermarket I go to pushes Eddy, and now they've been getting into Talika, and they've been pushing those as their standard payments. And you know, they give you a point card, and it has one of those two built in. And it's always annoying because they ask every time, you know, are you paying with Eddy? And I'm like, no, I'm not paying with Eddy. If you ask me one more time, I'm going to scream. It's like, no, the good cashiers remember me, and they just hand the card right back. And the newbies always, they're instructed to, so they always ask, are you paying with Eddy? And I'm like, no. And that's, one of these days, I'm just going to walk out of the store. It's one of those microaggressions. I'm just like, oh, you know, it's like Family Mart people not understanding me when I say baked oderi takosu. Like I don't understand. Maybe it's because I'm sick and I can't understand my pronunciation, but it's like it's not that hard. It's right there. But regardless, the point of this whole long rambling story was that my supermarket not only supports those payment systems that they're pushing, but they also support ID, they support Suica and the train card based payment systems. There's lots of different ways to pay, so it's not like they're like Walmart, for example, where it's like Walmart has Walmart Pay and they're not supporting Apple Pay or Android Pay. I guess it's Google Pay now. You know, they're not supporting any of those systems. It's just their own system. It's a cash grab. It's a way to get these systems, you know? And so I think that's the difference maybe between other countries and Japan, is that there are a bunch of standards, and individual companies and individual organizations and stores are pushing their own payment systems, but they also support the other payment systems because there's standardization around Velika. So it actually makes it not so bad that these three bank systems are trying to push for their own QR code based systems. At least Mitsui Sumitomo Ginko, they offer a physical ATM based ID payment system that also supports Visa's contactless system. So you can use it in Japan and outside of Japan. And so they have that along with this new QR code based system. So there's many options. It's not like they're locking you into just one. And I think that's great. And I wish that more countries and more companies, especially businesses, would get along. I feel like there's so much, I don't want to say greed, but that's how it kind of feels. It's like all these different companies in many countries, and in America is a prime example, they want their own system, and they're locking out the other competition. And it's like, can't we just all get along? Like, can't we all just support these different payment systems? Like, you can offer points or something, some kind of bonus. You know, that's what they do at the supermarket. If you pay via Eddy or Lika, they'll give you a little bit extra points. Whereas if you pay with a different system, then, you know, you don't get as much. So they pass a little bit of that savings back onto you. So it works out for everyone. They save money on the transaction processing because it's their own system. And you get a little bit back because they can pass a little bit of that savings on to you. Whereas Walmart's just like, nope, it's Walmart pay or bust. And it's like, okay, well, then make it good, make it right. So anyway, I'm just excited and I'm happy that there isn't as much fragmentation as in other countries. And it'll be interesting to see where things go. You know, some people enjoy chatting with plants or trees, and maybe it helps them feel at one with nature, or it simply makes them feel less alone. Well, Japanese electronics company TDK, perhaps best known for selling blank cassettes and CDRs and DVD-Rs, they've announced a new bonsai plant, you know, a bonsai, I guess is what you would call it, a bonsai plant that communicates with people. Now, TDK has been promoting their Attracting Tomorrow campaign since 2015, and bonsai, spelled B-O-N-S, and then A-I, capitalized, is a concept to, quote, make bonsai that can communicate with humans, hence bonsai and AI, so bonsai, right? AI, right? Now, it's a regular bonsai plant, but it's equipped with a sensor that measures the dryness of the soil in the base part, as well as having a 9-axis sensor for correcting the tilt when you move it around, plus a camera, a speaker, a solar cell, lots of things. Now, bonsai has three basic functions: to talk with people, to move with the sun, and to ask for water when the soil becomes dry. And many, many details and specifications, as well as the kind of AI that's being used, haven't been published yet. And there's no plans to sell this as a product or even exhibit it at any kind of trade show or anything. It mostly just seems like a proof of concept thing to put in a nice video and put it on YouTube. And, you know, it's also for research and promoting TDK, but still, I think it's pretty cool. You know, I'm sure there's many, many people who love bonsai or who love gardening, and they would love a chance to chat with their garden. And I could actually see this tech having practical uses, not only in gardening, but also in farming and other industries, to be able to have your plants tell you, hey, I need some water. You know, that might actually make things a lot easier for people who do this for a living. And you know, if nothing else, maybe there'll be a chance for us to talk with our bonsai in the near future. Pictograms on Japanese electric toilets have been registered as a global standard in a step aimed at making such signs more familiar with the growing number of tourists that are visiting Japan. The 6 kinds of pictograms that show instructions on what buttons to push when operating one of those high-tech Japanese toilets have been recognized by the International Organization for Standardization, according to the Ministry of Economy, Trade, and Industry of Japan. These pictograms, designed by a Japanese industrial body of toilet makers, include those for strong flush, bidet, and raise and lower the lid. And, you know, some of these, they make sense, you know, like the raise and lower the lid one. It seems pretty simple. It's got arrows and it shows the lid going. Stop is just kind of a square. Flush is a little weird. It kind of looks like a hurricane or something like that. There's always the sorry, folks, it looks like a butt. It's like a little, imagine an M upside down, and it's got water spewing into it. Anyway, that's as far as I want to go. You look at the picture if you want to know the rest. You know, and frankly, as these high-tech Japanese toilets are becoming increasingly popular overseas, experts hope that these pictograms can become a global standard, and that domestic manufacturers of these toilets with water spray functions are going to be able to enter the overseas markets. Definitely the brand that most people know, even outside of Japan, is Total, and you know, I think it's great if it'll make it easier for people to use these toilets when they're here and maybe take home a nice souvenir. I don't know if you can take that on the plane, but, you know, I could see people wanting to order these when they get home. And if it was the same design as the ones that they used in Japan, I think that'd be fantastic. And apparently they're also going to modify the Japanese standards for these symbols within this year to match the international standards. So it's good to see that one of Japan's most famous and infamous pieces of technology is finally getting spread across the world. Conveyor belt sushi restaurants are extremely popular in Japan, so much so that even the mighty McDonald's is worried with their popularity. But you know, while we knew they're popular, we didn't quite know that they'd be a great way to glimpse into the lives of average Japanese people. Now, look, I just want to preface this by saying up front, do not do this. But there's been a video that's been going around, and it's a YouTuber who put his GoPro on one of the plates at the sushi restaurant. I know some of you are cringing right now. He put his GoPro on the conveyor belt, and it's 7 minutes of, well, frankly, it's really fascinating to watch. And you see all these kinds of different people, and some of them wave to the camera, and some smile, and, oh, look at that, you know. But here's the thing. Japan is very privacy conscious, and there's a lot of people who are going to be coming in the next few years to Japan. And what you need to understand is that, I don't want to sound like a spoil sport, but it makes it harder on all of us when people come here and do things like this. Frankly, it's it's rude, and it's just not something that people do here. The best example I can give of privacy laws, I think, or privacy being taken very seriously here, is TV reruns. You know, there's lots of really cool shows over the years that have been produced that I would love to see, but I can only see in reruns on YouTube from off-air recordings, because they can't be rerun. If you watch Japanese TV for any length of time, and you'll see them play clips of old shows, the clips are always very short, and most of the time, they have the audience faces blurred, because they don't have a license in perpetuity, as best I can tell, to air that forever. They can air it for a certain length of time, and then after that, people who aren't contracted, the famous people, basically anyone who's not a singer or a host or performer or presenter, you know, they blur their faces. And it's kind of weird. The first time you see it, you're like, why are they blurring the whole crowd? Well, it's a privacy thing. It's like, they were there, they agreed to be filmed, but it's like, okay, but now we can't use that footage anymore. And maybe there's a better reason for it, I don't know, but that's the best I can come up with. But that kind of thing, you know, there are big signs in a lot of places, no cameras, no filming, you know, and you don't see the kinds of YouTubers and YouTube videos that you do in other countries. People don't go into stores and film. I mean, you see it, it happens. It's not that it doesn't, but I don't think it's as widespread or as common, maybe, especially in Los Angeles, places like that. You just don't see people with their, you know, selfie sticks going into places and doing vlogs and things. It's people take their privacy really seriously here. And so I think on the one hand, it's a really cool piece of art, and I really enjoyed watching it. On the other hand, it's like, it kind of made me cringe, because it's just like, none of these people agreed to be filmed, and you're putting them up there, and I just feel like, and then it went into the kitchen, and it's just like, I don't know, I'm just amazed that the guy didn't get kicked out, or they didn't, like, delete the footage or whatever. I don't know. So just, you know, it goes back to Logan Paul. It's like, try to be respectful, you know, just don't do this kind of thing. As cool as it is, it's like, it just kind of makes it harder on the rest of us. Japan is well known for horror films. Not that I'm a big fan personally, but, you know, whatever floats your boat. And with some kids aware of famous scenes in front of TVs, word has been spreading among them this week that a magic button, quote-unquote, on some remotes opens a gateway between the living and the dead. Writer Kujidadaki Chonosuke explained this week that his 7-year-old daughter told him about a rumor that was going around school that certain TVs were able to tune into the, quote, world after death. The daughter chillingly added, our TV does too! She demonstrated by pressing the button that switched the television to pick up on an analog signal. Now, since Japan switched to digital many, many years ago, nothing appeared but static. This is commonly referred to as Suna Arashi, or sandstorm in Japanese. And as kids growing up in a purely digital era of broadcasting have never encountered the annoyance that is analog static, they assumed that it was a way to enter the world of the dead. You know, it's kind of funny. I enjoy occasionally watching those kids react videos, although it tends to make you feel a little bit old. But it's always funny to watch how technology that some of us took for granted growing up and as everyday common thing, and they take it and they go, what is this? And they make up their own stories about it. I thought it was a really cute way of them trying to explain what it was, and hopefully none of you will get sucked into the world of the dead. Let me see if I can sing this. It's train talk time! Oh yeah, my voice is still gone. This week, a story of a really cool display. Alright, so it's an ad, but still. Which Netflix Japan ran in the underground walkway, which connects JR Shinjuku Station and Tokyo Metro Shinjuku Station, at the end of February. Now, the ad features multiple panels of eyes. No static, though. But not just any eyes, anime eyes. 280 characters, or 560 individual eyes, for those of you counting, were represented. And those came from 89 different series, all of which are presumably streaming on Netflix. Many passengers stop to take pictures, search for their favorite characters, and try and see how many they could recognize. And it's surprising from the few pictures I looked at just how many I was able to recognize. I mean, I guess it makes sense. After all, Japanese media, and especially anime and manga, is known for having characters who are stylized with big, bold eyes. And as I've said time and time again, video streaming services have been slow to catch on in Japan, partially due to Japanese mainstream live-action television not producing nearly as miniseries as its American counterpart, and anime, on the other hand, seems to be more popular than ever, with more content being produced now than perhaps at any time in the past, and almost all of it's airing during late-night TV slots. And these time slots actually give streaming services a great leg up, as many people, especially people who work a regular job, may not be able to watch shows when they air at 1 or 2 or even 3 in the morning, so being able to watch them anytime on streaming services is a huge reason to subscribe, and Netflix knows it. The ad at Shinjuku Station has already come down, but the pictures remain, as is a 30-second CM spot, which Netflix made to promote their campaign, so if you're interested in peering into the eyes of your favorite characters, or maybe even just seeing how cool it looked, check out the link in the show notes. Sony has announced that it's ending support for free PlayStation 3 and Vita titles as part of a PlayStation Plus subscription. Sony stated that they will focus on PS4 titles instead. As of right now, each month, 6 free games are available to download, but when support for the PS3 and Vita ends on March 8th, 2019, this will drop to 2 a month. You know, I had a PS4 and I had a PS Plus subscription, and I didn't really use either of them, and especially after the Switch came out, to me at least, being able to play the same game on mobile, being able to take it with me and play it on the TV when I come home, that's much more appealing than having something that's locked and dedicated to the television. Even if the graphics are much better on the PS4, I much prefer the Switch. And actually, I'm really excited because Nintendo had their Nintendo Direct this week, and of course, they smashed it out of the park, and you know what I'm talking about. But not only that, I'm excited for Crash Bandicoot, which had been one of the reasons I had been keeping my PS4. Finally, I was just like, well, forget it. I don't really want to play it that bad. But now that it's coming out on Switch, I'm excited to go back and replay those games. Yes, of course, I'm excited for Smash Brothers, and also Mario Tennis looks pretty cool. Luigi's Mansion, I wish that was coming out on not the 3DS, but the Switch. But, you know, I still have a 3DS, so I'll probably end up playing Luigi's Mansion too. That looks like really cool. Actually, Nintendo's Direct this week was fantastic. If you haven't checked it out, check out all the announcements they made. 2018 is looking really strong for Nintendo, and I'm really excited to see where things go. Now, if we could just get a Nintendo 64 Mini, right? So you see how I set that up? I had everything ready to go to lead into Nintendo, but I want to wait and do it when I can properly write this thing and when I'm not feeling so bad. And it's that would add probably another 10 to 15 minutes that I need to edit. So I'm just going to end the podcast here. One quick thing that I really did want to mention was a follow-up on the Japanese curling team. You know, they came back to Hokkaido, and the curling girls, as they've been dubbed, they've become beloved all across Japan, and especially in Hokkaido, because, of course, they use the Hokkaido dialect. But actually, there was a report that came out saying that their bronze medal match against the UK recorded an average television viewership rate of 25%, and it jumped to an incredible 42.3% right during the final end. And when they returned to Japan, the 5 medal winners, Satsuki Fujisawa, Chinami Yoshida, Yumi Suzuki, Yurika Yoshida, and Mari Motohashi, they found a hero's welcome waiting for them. And what was really cool is that J.A. Zenchu, Japan's Central Agricultural Co-op Union, and a sponsor of the women's curling team, gave them 6 metric tons, that's 13,228 pounds of rice. Now, if that sounds like it's an incredible amount, it really is. You know, based on average annual consumption, it would take a Japanese adult more than 100 years to eat that much. Now, they haven't specified whether that is the amount that they're giving the entire team, or if each member is going to get one of those, but even if they split it 5 ways, that would still mean more than 2 decades of rice for each person. Now, of course, unless you've got a silo to store everything in it, that's more rice than you could possibly store in your entire home. So they're kind of working out the logistics of it still, but most likely what's going to happen is that they're going to basically give them 500 yen komeken vouchers. And these vouchers can be used to pay for rice and specialty shops and grocery stores. Now, the rules for using these komeken as payment vary from store to store. Some will accept them only in exchange for rice, while others simply require that rice be a part of what they're buying. And some of them just allow customers to pay for any kind of groceries with them. And of course, the company's spokesperson said that they hope the curling team uses the vouchers for rice, though, and that they continue to be healthy and keep doing their best. You know, I'm thrilled that they won it, and I'm thrilled that they got something out of it, and that they're going to have rice to eat for years to come. And hopefully we'll see them again in 4 years, and they could take maybe a gold next time. Wouldn't that be incredible? Oh, man. I really want to do curling. I got to find a place to try it. I'd love to play. If anyone knows any curling places to go in Osaka, or if you know any place that I can play, let me know. And also, I would love to know, for those of you who have been to a play or a concert or things outside of Japan, I really don't have a lot of experience with it, but I would love to know, how is it different than in Japan? I know, you know, here at least, if you've ever been to a Japanese concert, like I said, it's really like rigid and strict, and people clap along, and it's basically about trying not to cause trouble for other people. And I'm wondering, like, do people wait to go to the bathroom between songs? Do people just get up and go? I don't know. I feel like I know the answer to this already, but if you have any stories to tell, I'd love to hear from you. Anyway, for now, if you can, please subscribe and Overcast or Pocket Cast or whatever podcast that you choose. It really means a whole lot to me. The show is also available on Apple Podcasts. If you could rate a review, and really help out with discovery and getting the word out there. And you can find the show notes for this episode at platypuspodcasts.com/geek/20. We made it to 20, which is also where you're going to find links to all of my social media. And if you have any comments, questions, concerns, topics, or you just want to chat about anything, especially how I can get over this cold and why I get sick every week, I'd love to hear from you. Please tweet them at me on Twitter at katiedaiyo with the hashtag ZettaiGeekDaiyo so I can find them. Until next week, 以上, katiedでした. Bye bye. せーの. 終了! 絶対ギークだよ is a Platypus Podcast production.
そうだね。うん。